Hi again, this is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy. So glad you're here and listening in. We have a great program. This evening, it's Kat Houston of Houston Textiles. We've been waiting a really long time for this interview, as Kat can probably attest to. About halfway through, we're going to open up the phone lines and you can call in and ask Kat your questions, 559-681-4020. We will be back in just a moment and Kat will introduce herself and tell you all about what the heck she is up to. It's pretty exciting stuff. Be right back.
This land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
This evening, with Heartstock, we have Kat Houston, and I'm really thankful that you're here and happy to share her story because it is pretty darn cool. Hi, Kat.
Hi, Carol.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm so excited because, gosh, it seems like it must have been at least 6-8 months ago that you guys came on my radar, and I was so excited. You're making fabric, and our listeners may not totally realize just how rare and unusual that is. Tell us all about Houston Textiles and what you do there.
Houston Textile is a small family-owned fabric manufacturing mill. We have taken vintage looms that were used in anywhere from the early 1900s to about the 1980s and restored them to get fabric going with a selvage edge, which modern looms do not provide. So our edges are, the selvage is a finished edge, and modern looms have an unfinished edge so they can unravel. We are currently the only ones in the United States producing at the moment a selvage denim. There are others that are popping up and starting, but they haven't got their machines running their denim yet. So it's a little exciting that we're the only ones right now.
So can you take us back a little bit? Your family history, how you guys met, and what inspired you to start making textiles?
Ryan and I met back in junior high. We didn't go to the same school, but that's about the age range we were. And it was just a happenstance that we had met each other through mutual friends. And we've just kind of stayed in each other's lives since then. And what started us with making fabrics is when we decided to start a family, we didn't want to use a stroller. They're big, they're bulky. They don't always work in situations like fairs or antique markets. So we wanted something that was not bulky, and we started baby wearing. And we thought we had bought a domestic product and found out that it wasn't. So we decided to look more into it and how they could be made. And we started making our own. And then when we acquired some of our vintage equipment, we had people approach us about making vintage workwear on that equipment. And it just evolved from making something for our child and us to making fabric for everyone.
You mentioned it wasn't a domestic product. Are you talking about the fabric that you were making your baby wears from? And why was it so important to you that it was a domestic product?
The first wrap that we ever bought to carry our daughter in wasn't domestic, that's right. And it was important for us for it to be domestic so we could support, you know, local, support small companies, support local farmers, and just have that conscious of supporting the people that are around us.
So I really consider you guys as being on the forefront of United States, the revitalization of manufacturing in the United States. Would you say that's accurate?
I do. It's a bit of a movement considering one of the manufacturing companies that was in the United States just closed in December, and they were the largest that we had for making fabric, selvage fabric. But they were too small for their big space. And they were bought by a few different companies in the last few years. And I think they made a move that made it actually more open for us to be here and support the local farmers and ranchers for the local domestic fabric.
Yeah, and I think this is really important also that you source cotton, I would imagine, and wool. From people in your geographic region. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you found those suppliers?
So with our cotton, we haven't done a run with regionally local cotton yet, though we have talked to a farm that we are excited to work with, and it's just getting their cotton through our local supply chain to be able to weave their cotton. But the wool we've sourced, it's just a couple hours away from where our mill is, and we found them through our local fiber shed, and we have a climate beneficial wool that we weave for them, and we also do a community supported cloth that's wool from her ranch with other local ranchers, wool for the weft, so other smaller companies, smaller ranches can get their fibers through the system as well.
So locally, it sounds like there's an entire movement that's, you have access to it. Can you talk a little bit about that and the organizations that are helping you? It seems like when you're really on, you know, the forefront of trying to revitalize something like this, you need a lot of support along the way. Is that true?
Yes. Support is always needed. It's something that when we have support, we're able to support the ranchers and farmers that are also local to us. And sometimes we have folks that want to get something made through us, but because they are smaller and don't produce large enough batches to make a fabric just solely from their own fibers, it's good to gather the community and see who else would assist in making that fabric for them. And it kind of makes a link with us being able to help them because we know all of these other ranchers and farmers that could do that.
So they can kind of pool their resources and get things made from what they're growing on their farms, it sounds like.
Yes. Yes.
It's pretty amazing.
We would have a single warp from either a cotton or a wool from somebody who has a large enough ability. And then the farmers and ranchers that don't have large enough for singular runs would just provide a weft and they would get that piece of fabric from their fibers.
And now these are two important words that I just love, warp and weft. Can you explain to our listeners what the heck that means? It's really amazing how the fabric is made, and it's an important point, I think.
So a warp is the fibers that are on our loom going vertical, and they interlace with what is a weft that we wind onto a bobbin and pass it back and forth with a shuttle through the warp to make a fabric.
And, you know, I'm trying to envision, and on your website, you have some photos of the looms. Can you talk about these, where they came from? And looking at the fabric, you can really see a lot of character. And I would imagine that comes from the looms themselves.
Yes. And the looms, we have quite a few lovely stories about the looms. One of our looms used to be used at the Department of Agriculture in Louisiana, and they used it for just showing people. So we didn't get it directly from the Department of Agriculture, but that's where its history is, and we have gotten that story along with the loom. Two of our looms, Ryan pulled out of a barn in Connecticut when a couple bought a house and didn't know what to do with these two giant looms in their barns. And we've had some that just came from a field in Montana, just sitting out in the weather, just needing somebody to find them a home.
Where at in Montana?
I'm actually not sure where they were in Montana. All I know is Montana.
I would imagine they were used for wool because Montana is, that's one of the things that we do here is we have sheep and lots of wool. Probably more so in the day when those things were really in use, more so than today. But at any rate, so they're vintage. Can you tell us, like, were they actually made here in the United States and when were they made?
All of our looms were made in the United States, and they were made back east in Massachusetts.
Mm. All of them, even the one that was, or the ones that came from Montana?
Yes, all of our looms were made back east in Massachusetts. That is actually where most weaving equipment is from, is the northeast states. When the United States had a large textile communities, they had a whole area of the East Coast where they had these machines made for weaving, for knitting, for winding bobbins, for making the krills that the yarn goes on. All of that was done back there.
A whole industry that's vanished, in essence, since, I'm going to say, the mid-60s?
That's about when things kind of really started to die down, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to talk a little bit more about the character of the fabric. Why is it that it looks so beautiful? And really, I mean, you can see the substance in the fabric. How is it that that's created and generated with these looms that we don't see on, yeah, things that are made overseas that are imported?
I think a lot of it comes with the quality of the fibers that we use and the care that we take with the fibers. With some looms, they just try and make a very light, thin fabric, and they don't take care of the fibers in a way that can make it last. Most of our fibers, our warp is double-plied, so it creates a little bit more of a thickness, but it also contributes to the longevity of the fabric.
Yeah, and on your website, there are some beautiful examples of things that are made with the fabric. Tell us a little bit about that story, and then we're going to take a quick break. Do you make, like, the beautiful shirts that I saw on there, or do you work with designers and makers?
A little bit of both. We do have some product research and development where we like to play with our fabric to see what we can make from it. Ryan has made a beautiful dress for me and my daughter and a shirt for our son. And then we've also worked with some local sewers to us that have made bags and shirts and hats even. So we do a little bit of work with both to see what our fabrics are capable of and pushing the limit of what they could be used for.
Mm. So when we come back, we'll talk about that a little bit more. This is the part of the show where you can call in 559-681-4020. We'd love to hear your questions, and you can also post them on Facebook. We'll be right back. is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy. And this evening's program, we have Kat Houston with us of Houston Textiles. And Kat, we were just talking about some of the beautiful things that you've made with your textiles. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And earlier you mentioned, you know, pushing the limits of what can be done with it. I'm really curious about that, what you found out.
So with our fabrics and having some things made, we've taken some of our materials that aren't traditionally used for, say, shirts, and made them into some very nice shirts. Like, you wouldn't imagine that a canvas material would make a very comfortable fitting shirt. But when you don't add sizing to the materials and you don't add a, I'm thinking of the word and I can't even think of it. I'm so sorry.
You mentioned sizing and other stuff that's added to the fabric. Are you talking about chemicals
that
are added?
Other stuff that's added, not necessarily chemicals, but chemicals are part of sizing in some recipes. There are also recipes for sizing that we have found in our old textile books that are, you know, things that you consume in food. And we've actually played around with those types of sizing, and they make that stiff fabric that you find when you get a new pair of jeans, but we haven't applied it to our fabrics. So they keep a nice, beautiful, soft feel. And so we are able to take like a canvas and turn it into a comfortable shirt, kind of like you would feel wearing, you know, a flannel. Mm. And so it has that a little bit thicker feel, but it's really soft and great, even though it's a canvas. And so we just kind of pushed the limit on what can this fabric really be used for, even if it's not the traditional use. And even with some of our chambrays, a very light chambray, we've made into a dress for our daughter, and it's very, very light, even though chambray is traditionally meant for a workwear shirt.
Mm-hmm. Have you found anything that didn't turn out so well that you couldn't do with your fabric?
I wouldn't say that you couldn't do with the fabric. We take a rough idea of what we want to do and make sure we can do it before we've applied anything to sewing. And so we haven't had anything fail yet. And I hope we never do. So it's been kind of really fun just to, that what we have worked on and tested has worked out really well.
Hmm. So I also discovered that you guys just finished a Kickstarter campaign. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So what has happened is when we had moved to a new facility, we had funding to help us get back into producing, but we didn't have enough funding. So we needed a little bit of a pick-me-up in our company to help us be able to bridge a gap with making fabrics as well as keeping in our new establishment. It's a wonderful space. It's got all the room for us to have growth. And we've acquired four new looms while in this space. And we now have more of a infrastructure with equipment to be able to produce more of what everybody's looking for, whether it be a gingham fabric or a woolen or a cotton, since they all require different types of loom.
So you turned to Kickstarter. Was that something you had done before? Is this a brand new thing for you guys?
We have never done a Kickstarter before, so it's brand new, and it's a little scary when you're watching and going, okay, do we think we can do this? You know, every day you're just like, oh, we got like 3 more followers and 3 more pledges, and you get excited and you're seeing all these people and people messaging you with, you know, support, and it's a really good feeling.
How'd that turn out for you?
It turned out really good. We've got successfully funded and we got a little bit over, and everybody is really excited and can't wait. And we're actually going to be ahead of schedule on getting everybody their reward.
So tell our listeners, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have, they have really great ideas, but no money to start. And there's a lot of really beautiful entrepreneurs that I would like to hear your success story. So you go on Kickstarter, and if I remember correctly, Kickstarter is one of those that if you do not fully fund your endeavor, you get bupkis, you get a goose egg. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. So for anybody that is looking to grow their business and they don't think they have the ability with the funding they have, it's really amazing to have supportive community. And even without a Kickstarter, just, you know, get your word out there. And there are people that just want to see somebody do what everybody is looking for. We want to see local providers for everything. Doesn't matter if it's doing artwork, sewing, making wood tables. I mean, there's just so much that I wish we could bring back. And if I could, I'd be one of those people that would go to everybody's startup and be like, here's some money, because it's worth it. And even though there's that little voice in the back of everybody's head that goes, I don't have the money, I don't have the ability, your community is a great gift, and they are so kind, and they will help. And, you know, it's, you just got to open up and let your idea out, and they'll show up. People will help. So.
And how much money did you raise?
We raised just over $36,000.
That should be a good shot in the arm, so to speak. That's awesome. And why Kickstarter? There are so many other platforms out there. Why did you guys decide on Kickstarter?
You know, we wanted to make sure that that community that we had already been talking to really was there and understood the importance of our company and our dreams, and their dreams are together entwined. So if we did one where we could get some of the funding without being successfully fully funded, it wouldn't show me the support of the community that I wanted to see for this business to succeed. And I really wanted to make sure that everybody that was behind us could see that we need this, and we want the full commitment, and we're willing to go with nothing, even if we can't get everything, because we want to see this, and we don't want to just go at it partially funded and not be able to do what we really need to do. It's one of those where if you don't have everything you need in this type of business, it makes it much more difficult, just because it is more of an overhead business due to lead time with all of our suppliers. The fashion industry is 2 years behind. What you see today was designed for you 2 years ago. And that also plays part in what we do. So we need them to see that we want this, all of it, to be able to give that to you. And for the designers we work to be able to give you these fabrics, that are, these pieces that are made of this fabric that are so touching.
So I found a quote on, I think it was your Kickstarter page, that I find really interesting, and I would love for you to talk about. We've got about 2 minutes left. The quote is, there's a lot about making fabric that's unknown. What does that mean?
Yes. Well, a lot of fabrics, there's not just a recipe for making it. You can't just open a book and go, oh, you have to do these things to make this fabric. There's a lot of deconstruction. There's a lot of testing with gears and picks and the proper threading of the looms and machines, or the twisting and spinning of the yarns. They all play into this important piece in making a piece of fabric. And there's just so much of it that is not written down anywhere and inside somebody's head or lost to time because it was never written down. Even when we buy old textile books and we see these recipes that are in there, a lot of times we find that there's writings on the inside of the book with little notes of what to do different or little scraps of paper that we find with them saying other things to do.
Secret recipes.
There's just so much. Yeah, secret recipes. There's just so much that hasn't been remembered or even found with making fabrics that it's just, there's so much to find out and learn, and hopefully somebody writes it down when they find it.
Well, I think it's beautiful that you guys are reviving this. Tell our listeners how they might find you.
You can find us by calling us at 916-546-5001. Or you can contact me through the website, which is HoustonTextile.com, or emailing me at info@HoustonTextile.com.
Thanks so much for being with us. It's been great, Kat, and I'm so glad we finally got you on.
I'm very happy, too.
We'll stay in touch. This is Heartstock Radio.
All right.
I'm Carol Murphy. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at butteamericaradio.org. That side was made.